Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm La. Well, speaking of ranting, we've got some reviews on DriveThruRPG of some of our episodes.
Yes, that's right. So now I think there's like a 1 in 5 chance of winning the prize now.
Wow.
Yeah, that's good.
Odds are plummeting. Join yes, now.
Yeah. Odds are plummeting, yeah.
So because of the review for Warriors Hoplites, which it was a positive review, but it was a request for Warriors Vikings, so we're going to bump.
Oh, sorry. That was actually a review of Norse Play.
Oh, Norse Play. That's right.
It was a review of Norse Play that said it was good, but hoped that we would do Vikings for our next Warriors episode.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which was number 3 in our queue, but we're going to bump that up to next.
Our next Warriors.
Our next Warriors. And the other, the less than glowing review was on our Secret Fire episode and said we were touch too negative and that the red stands for the blood.
The blood on our hands from the things we don't like.
Yeah.
You have no idea how hard we tried to be positive.
Yeah,
and that was edited down.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's like every fifth word that Wayne was saying was pompous, and we just cut that out, cut it out.
Yeah,
I did feel bad after that episode. You know, you're just like, oh, that was a bit of a downer.
Well, yeah, we did.
I'd like to get more feedback on that because that was one of our most listened to episodes. I'm wondering if it was perceived as overly negative or if people agreed with us or not.
Well, people shouldn't listen to Lost Potential.
Oh Lord, no.
Yeah. If you thought episode like the Secret Fire episode was negative. Yeah, don't listen to that changeling one.
Even our Fairy Tale episode came out of that. That was
true,
and that's
a really
positive
good one. Yeah.
But even when we, at the end of the Secret Fire episode, like, you and I both kind of looked at each other and said, well, this is kind of negative. And then we tried to put, not a positive spin on it, but at least sort of, you know, couch our criticisms in, I don't know, something.
I don't know.
You?
All right. We, in the collective sense, you possibly more than I. Because you're the one who, I'm the one who paid for it, so.
I didn't see it as negatively as you guys did. I thought there were some good points to it, though I agree the writing style was horrid.
I'll let that pass rather than have another.
Throwdown?
Another throwdown, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I don't think I could handle another.
And there's also John's dilemma on the forums, or John's problem.
So, gaming related, right?
Yeah,
we're not that kind of podcast.
Dear Idle Red Hands.
Yeah, you're right. You're like, John's problem. I'm like, what? Does it burn when he pees? That's kind of what it sounded like.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Now, we're not doctors, but you might want to get that checked out. No, his gaming related problem.
Right.
He has the latest D&D starter box, but he can't get a group together, and he's a little bit worried about being a first time game master.
It's always scary the first time.
It really is. It's always awkward and self-conscious.
Sometimes it burns when you pee out.
Yeah, it is kind of difficult. If it's difficult to get a group together, then yeah, that's kind of a problem. Obviously, you're not going to be able to play. But I remember looking at the description of what came in the box set, and I'm pretty sure it comes with a solo play adventure and a second adventure designed for a group of about like 4 to 5 players. So, like, I couldn't get a better description of what was in the box, but I'm pretty sure it has something that will walk you through an adventure and kind of how to play.
I haven't seen the box set myself, but the 4th edition DMG is a really good resource for new GM.
For someone who's never GM'd before?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was really impressed by
it. Has a lot of really good advice.
The 4E DMG.
Yeah.
It's written really well. It's not very technical. There's a lot of little boxes, like anecdotes.
Yeah. How to deal with the different types of players, how to structure adventures depending on who's in your group, stuff.
That was the thing I was most impressed with of the first 3 core books for 4E
was the
Dungeon Master's Guide. Usually that's something you just like,
usually all that it was is like the list of treasures and magical items.
Yeah, I think the 4E is tough for a new DM because there are so many rules, but it's not... What's the word for it? It's not like a wall. It's not impossible at all. And it's really good for any new players that you might have in your group as well.
I just ordered the Pathfinder beginner box so I could see if they've done a good job of making a 3.75 version of D&D really accessible. Mm. Because I think 3.5 or Pathfinder, the rules are a touch more complex than the 4E rules.
Okay.
So I want to see how that beginner box has made it easy for a first-time player and especially a first-time GM to navigate that system.
I wonder how big it is.
I'll let you know in a week or so.
Cool. Well, I was just saying, because the Pathfinder, the player's book is enormous. So.
Oh, the box itself's pretty. It's smaller than your average board game box.
Hmm.
We'll see anything smaller than a Fantasy Flight board game box.
Yeah. But then I was thinking, and Matt on the forums, or Cisco on the forums, would probably be better because they both own copies of it. But the Castle Ravenloft board game, which is kind of a hybrid of a traditional board game and
like a role-playing
game.
Yeah.
And we're going to be playing one of those shortly, Descent. Mm. So we'll talk about that in our next episode. Mm-hmm. And I remember last game day, board game day that Wayne and I went to, we were talking to somebody else who owns it, and he said the thing that he really liked about it was that you didn't need a game master.
Hmm. Oh, you're talking about Castle Ravenloft or Legend of Dritz.
Yeah. So I'll have to convince Matt to break that game out and we'll play it so we can talk about how good it is as a gateway to role-playing.
Yeah, I believe the Legend of Dritz, that's when you wanted me to rant.
Yeah, you didn't seem too impressed by it. And I've heard the least amount about that one. I've heard more about the Ravenloft and the Ashalon one.
I guess for a new player, like someone getting into it, then I would probably recommend one of those games, and you know, not to try and make John spend more money, you know, to go.
Well, that's the thing. I want to have a review because you're looking at $50+ for those games, or in Japan,
like 84.
Oh yeah, over 8,000 yen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I didn't want to kind of like recommend and say, hey, and spend more money on this other thing, you know, to get into this second hobby, you know. But I think coming at it from someone who's never played a role-playing game before, that probably would be a good step because everybody's played a board game, and even if board games are slightly different, some core concepts are still the same. But coming at it from someone who was already an established role player, I think maybe that's why I didn't like them, because I expected the system to be different.
You haven't played them.
All right, fine. Looking at them. All right. Just poke holes.
I didn't like the color of the box, really.
All right. I don't sound like that, all right?
I know that you guys are going to disagree with this, but I could also recommend Savage Worlds.
Disagree.
Yeah, I know.
Why would you recommend Savage Worlds?
I think the rules are pretty easy to pick up, and it's the low entry cost means that if you don't like it, it's not a huge thing, but it's a good way to get into a role-playing game.
But what about the problem of somebody who's worried about being a game master? And let's say they can't find... Of course, the solution is go to a gaming store and find an established game master. But
that's a great suggestion, yes.
But what about someone who doesn't have that option, like John doesn't have that option?
If you're looking at a couple of guys or a couple of guys and women who are all new to the hobby and there's no one else around and they really want to try it, but none of them want to be the game master, I don't think Savage Worlds would be
then you have to look into, if none of them want to be a game master, if that's going to be the criterion, you're going to have to look at games that don't have any game masters. So you're looking at that board game or something like maybe Cosmic Patrol, where you share around the game master thing. I think in the end, though, the most games have game masters because it's a good way to run a game. And I'd say...
Oh, yeah. No one's saying to replace it, but just for that first game or two. But yeah, Cosmic Control is a good idea as well.
And something that you can do
short. And that's quite inexpensive.
Yeah. And that way everyone can play around. Maybe someone turns out that they love it, that they want to be the game master. So. Yeah.
I heard a discussion like this before, and somebody recommended Savage Worlds, and kind of my like or dislike for the system aside. Yeah, the book is small, and there's kind of like a low entry fee, but it's a very, like, there's a lot of rules in that book, and it's kind of like a system where you have to ad lib and kind of make stuff up on the fly. Probably wouldn't be that good of an idea.
I think that's a reason why it is a good idea. If you're not as sure of the rules or of what you're doing, it gives you more wiggle room than, say, 4E would.
I suppose. I guess it's two different ways to look at it. I see, like, if you actually have structure, someone who's starting out can say, oh, okay, I do A, B, C, D, and that's what the game is, that's what we do. Where if you just kind of, if things are looser, maybe it depends on the person who's going to GM, but they would say, okay, well, I can tell a story, so I can ad-lib this, but someone who sort of, and I believe actually John said he liked writing stories, so maybe that could be a possibility, but someone who doesn't write a story, they look at it and they say, I don't know what to do. You've given me suggestions, but no concrete rules to follow.
Yeah, like, I think my reservation while recommending Savage Worlds is more to do with the point buy idea.
That's a good point.
We are going to play Marvel Superheroes, the basic game, soon, and there's a couple of things in that I think would be good for a new GM. And, well, first, you'd have to be into superheroes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you have a universe that everybody kind of gets, even if they don't read the comics, because the movies are so prevalent now.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of familiar with superheroes and that world. It comes with an adventure, or they call them events, and that's what we're actually going to run that in our own group to see how that is. And I think that's really helpful when a game offers an adventure in the book and says, like, here's a sample, here's a taste. Yeah. And then you also have the what they call the file cards.
Yeah, the data files.
Oh, you can choose your character.
And the characters are already made for you. Mm. And because it is an established universe, they don't seem like these generic characters that you have no connection to. You are playing Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah.
You're playing Captain America, Spider-Man.
That's actually a good point. A lot of games out there, and 4E might be a good example of it, have their test run versions that includes like the basic rules that you need to play a module that's included with it. And it's free to download. So that's a nice way to ease into being a DM.
Does D&D do that?
Yeah, D&D has. I remember
to give out stuff for free.
Yeah, I remember downloading their playtest. I don't know if it was called playtest or something, but maybe like the
quick start rules.
Something like that. Yeah,
a lot of. And we've linked some in the past, and we were talking about we're gonna on the website. We'll link a number of quick start rules so people can get started in the hobby.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way, because if it's one of those things where you just want to avoid being a GM altogether, then maybe you're looking at the board games. But if it's something a way to ease yourself into it, that might be a good way to go.
And since we're talking about game mastering, we decided to do an episode more for the game master, and we're going to be talking about like narrative structures and taking different ideas from books and movies and how to apply it to your game. So I'll turn it over to Wayne.
Yeah, that was pretty much the intro I kind of planned to, since you explained what we're going to do already.
You read it out of his notebook.
Yeah, I didn't write that down. I don't really know much more I can say. I guess in the...
Did you mention narrative structures, Lyle? Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Okay, my name's Wayne. Yeah.
All right, well, covered that too. Sorry, I didn't know that was your voice.
Well, that was basically yeah. I honestly don't really know what more to say.
All right, so which one do we start with?
So what's the first narrative structure that we'll be talking about?
I think that a good one to start with would be in media res. You know, because a lot of books and movies now, they start with that. That's kind of how you start. All right. Now, what, you stealing my intro already screwed me up, so just keep laughing.
And when
up.
You get to the end, and stop.
All right. I'm going to tell a story as the beginning. After that comes the middle. And then you finish at the end.
But I guess in media res is a little bit different, because you're not starting at a traditional beginning.
Yeah.
Right. Like a good classic example.
For the people who don't speak Latin, what is it?
It means in the middle of things. And a good example of in media res is the opening to, of course, Star Wars.
Pretty much any action movie recently, huh?
Yeah, any
action
movie.
Starts with a battle
movie.
Scene.
Or it just kind of, there's no build up, or there's no explaining of what the situation is. You just... start in the middle of that situation and go.
Saving Private Ryan, things like that.
Yeah, like many war movies start in media res because they don't show you like the build up on the domestic front to how the war started. You just start in the middle of the war.
Yeah, start with a bang.
Yeah, exactly. Start with a bang. And it's kind of designed to like hook people, get people interested. And then once they're interested, then after that scene is over, you kind of do the exposition and maybe explain how you got there or not.
Well, I really like in media res for starting off games, especially when it comes to something more like an action scene or a combat. It's a great way to get a group of characters who aren't already attached to give them some attachment to each other.
When you look at a traditional game story structure, a lot of times they'll try to get some sort of action scene.
Mm-hmm. In the first adventure.
In the first adventure. Some of them have a little bit of build up just to kind of, you meet somewhere and you're going to go here and here's the problem and fight.
Yeah.
But yeah, all Immedia Res does is cut out that you meet somewhere and walk there. You just, you're
here's
in
your character
fight.
Sheet and there's an orc running at you.
Yeah.
Or in my case, a rhino.
and that's really good in that combat tends to be the most difficult part of the rules.
Yeah.
And it allows people to, like, let's just get it out of the way.
Yeah. And like I said, I think it builds, you have to rely on the other characters for your character's life. So it builds a start of an attachment.
Right. I think I would put like a caveat on that. In that if you're going to use this idea, I think you would kind of have to establish that the characters are already a team. Like when we did our pulp game, right? We knew the characters were going to be a team right when we built them, before we even started playing. And then I just kind of plunked you down in the middle of a situation and imagine kind of the in media res thing before the credit, also what's called a cold start, and everybody worked together and kind of nobody did the classic, well, I don't know that guy, so I'm not going to help him, or I'm going to go over here by myself.
Yours was very similar to the James Bond style of cold start in that it actually has nothing to do with the main story.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a few minutes of fun just to get you excited to watch another James Bond movie. Then it hits the credits, and then you kind of start like another movie, really. Yeah. And that's what you did. And you see this in comic books sometimes, or a lot of times, where the superhero is fighting like minor bad guys, maybe just regular criminals, mm-hmm. in the first few pages. Just so you get a lot of excitement. And then that gets quickly resolved, and then it starts into a longer story.
Yeah.
And you start to build up to the next one. So you get like two bite scenes in one comic.
Yeah, I see it in quite a few video games as well, too. You just start off in the thick of things.
And that's exactly how I saw it. I saw it as...
Well, I was just saying there's two ways. Yeah. You can start in the thick of things, which is going to be related to the main story.
I see.
Or a la James Bond or a lot of comics, you start in the thick of things and same with Wayne's Pulp game. And it's not really... It's not at all part of the main story, but it's just a nice introduction. Gets people who... And I agree with Wayne that it works really well if you have an established group.
Mm-hmm.
Like, or people who've already... decided before the game started how their party is connected.
Yeah.
And it gets them practicing working together.
Yeah, I was just thinking like the fantasy example, right? You all meet in a tavern, you don't really know each other except you as players know these other characters are the player characters, and so you know, okay, I'm going to be working with these guys. If you just took that and plunked them into battle, like, yeah, you would start to build some relationships, but then you would also get the players who say, well, I'm playing my character. My character doesn't know these guys, so I'm not going to help them. You know,
yeah. The way to do that is to lessen the escape routes, I guess.
There's one way out of this room where there's like a demon prince in there.
So the Star Wars really starts in the trash compactor.
Actually, that's one way of saying it. Like recently,
you could do that. You're in there, and you're like, "What am I doing here?" And all of a sudden, like two other people like fall through the chute. And
absolutely. Like if you do the tavern example and say there's a fight in the tavern, then you're right. There isn't much reason for these people to choose these other specific people. Mm-hmm. There's lots of other people, and you're in the middle of a city where you can walk somewhere else. But there's kind of the new era of tavern where you're a caravan guard, and the caravan is attacked. So people, you haven't.
I think he's not saying the new era of tavern where it's a mobile tavern.
The new tavern is on wheels. Yeah, we're going for a ride.
He's saying what's replaced.
Is there a bathroom on this game?
No.
It's called the ground outside the caravan.
I think it's D&D that's doing this recently, but instead of the you all meet in a tavern, the in vogue thing recently is you're all part of a caravan. You've all been hired to guard this caravan. And
that's been around for a while, but okay. I can see where it's being used more.
And the situation is that unlike...
I did think he meant like a new tavern.
They have that somewhere in Europe where they have these little bars on wheels that drive around the city. You sit down and have a beer while you cruise around the city.
You know, they have the party boats.
Yeah, I suppose that as well.
Japan has it as well.
So that's what you do. Your characters are all in a party boat. But basically, again, like there's in a caravan or a situation where you're outside of a city, there's not a lot of other places to go. There's you lost some of the support. There's not many NPCs left. Mm-hmm. So the characters have to band together to get themselves out of the situation. And that builds a relationship.
I agree. One thing I would recommend is that the player, you give them, instead of saying, what's your connection mm-hmm. to the other players and establish that before the game starts, you would say, you're going to be in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you there?
Yeah.
And that's where maybe you get attacked or whatever, and you notice that there's other people at this particular shrine or location.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you're in a very crowded area, a city or like something with escape routes or just other places to go or other factions to ally with, then it can be a real debacle.
Yeah. So that's something to keep in mind if you're doing that.
Rather than replacing what's your connection to the other characters, I would do it. What's your connection to the other characters or maybe, and why are you in this forest?
I also like that type of start because you can get a feel for the game straight away.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the next structure?
The next one, and this kind of ties into in media res, is the flash. Like flashback, flash forward, the flash. Not the superhero.
I was thinking of the sexual pervert right on.
Or the sexual pervert. Thank you, Chris. We're not talking about raincoats or trench coats. No, we're talking about, everybody knows what a flashback is, and, it kind of ties into in media res, because some stories use flashbacks to give you that backstory to what happened before the story started.
I would say probably the flash forward is more similar to the in media res.
No, sorry, not similar. What I'm saying is some stories that use in media res then use a flashback to give you what happened the story started.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So it starts in the battle and then kind of goes back in time.
Yeah.
And,
not every story does that, but sometimes you do.
Is really a flashback, though? Because the flash is kind of a quick scene.
And I know what he's saying. It's in the battle, and then let's say it goes to...
6 days before.
No, that's what I was confused initially, because that's more I see as a flash forward.
Yeah.
Like I know Battlestar Galactica used it, and I think it's become... perhaps too common now.
Right. Skyline used it.
Skyline used it. Monsters used it.
My failed D&D campaign used it.
Yeah. That was a flash forward. But you were thinking it was a flash sideways, which it wasn't. But it finishes, and then it goes like 6 days before, mm-hmm. or 12 hours before, yeah. and then the movie starts right. from there. But yeah, in the flashback, yeah, sometimes, yeah, let's say there's a battle going on, and then somebody then thinks, you know, like saying goodbye to his wife, and we watch that to provide perhaps some character development.
Well, a good example, maybe not a good example, but an example could be the start of the...
a terrible example could be the
start of that, the Spartacus series. It could be a flashback, because the first episode is, we start with him in the gladiatorial pit, getting ready for his battle, then he kind of, most of the first episode is then a flashback of how he got to that point. And then we finish up the episode with his gladiatorial battle. So it's a long flashback, but...
That's more framing, though, isn't it?
But I do see what you're saying. Like, if a flashback is too long, like, is it really a flashback?
Just splitting hairs, no big deal. Yeah, fair enough. But, okay, so using it in a game. We've all used it in our games. Hey.
Yeah, I was thinking.
I think you used it in Changeling for views of the fairy world.
Yeah.
Used it in Vampire Lyle for the flash forward to see the future thing.
Yeah.
I used it quite a bit in mine. So how did it go?
I did a flash forward, and it was quite... You guys weren't ready for it, mm-hmm. so it was a big surprise.
So it was our fault.
No, it was a surprise because we weren't expecting it.
No, you were surprised, and it was 50 years in the future. And I think there was some initial confusion, but what I had done is, this is kind of like a dream. You don't know if this is the real reality. There seems to be some sort of shared experience, and you have no memory of the previous 50 years. And then it cuts... I think the time... The amount of time meant that it wasn't going to be a hurry up and let's try to stop or resolve or accomplish this particular flash forward, because it was so far into the future. And, mm-hmm. and that was some of the criticism, that it was too big and too far away to really care about once you got back from the flash forward. Mm-hmm. But I think the disorientation I thought was good.
Yeah.
I think if it was like a week in the future, like mm-hmm. if somebody had decided to grab a newspaper and it's like, oh, this is what happened to the previous 7 days.
Yeah.
And then you cut back to the present, then I think there would have been more of an immediacy and a better idea of what you can do to deal with that flash forward.
The idea was a whole big post-apocalyptic world 50 years later, so it was really big. And I think your character, Wayne, that said, it's just too much. For that, was it?
Oh, well, yeah, it was...
Well, Wayne said it, not his character.
Yeah. I believe my character didn't say anything because he'd been catatonic for those 50 years.
That's right, yeah.
No, it was, like as Lyle said, it did seem too big. So, I mean, essentially the world kind of ended.
I liked it on a personal...
I'm not saying I didn't like it at all. I just didn't know how our characters would address it in-game, just because it was so massive.
And it was the objective was to introduce certain antagonists mm-hmm. and to provide hints of their existence without just saying it. It was just another way to give you a clue. So it achieved that objective. Mm-hmm. But then I think then you... You guys as players are wondering, what am I supposed to do with this information? Because we haven't encountered these guys in the present, which was coming. Like, mm-hmm. you're encountering them. But at the time, there was a lot of, I don't know if Lyle wants me to now change and abandon these current story arcs to pursue this one, which you weren't supposed to, so.
And that's what I did, too.
Yeah. Well, I just kind of thought of this now. Maybe something that you could do if, like as you said, Lyle, putting the flashback a short distance in the future gives the players and the characters a sense of, like, immediacy. You know, and this thing's going to happen quickly, so we kind of need to do something about it.
Yeah.
But if you started with a flashback that was kind of 50 years in the future.
Forward.
Right? Sorry. If you started with a flash forward that was 50 years in the future, unfortunately, the vampire season, because you broke it into seasons, ended kind of before this happened. But you could do a series of flash forwards, each one getting closer to the current point in time. Like, you mm-hmm. can start with one 50 years away, then start with one, do another one 25 years away, 10 years, you know, and go down to like a week or so. I think that would be kind of interesting because the players could kind of see how this thing is going to progress, and that would give them maybe a better idea of Ooh. What they could do to prevent this thing or, you know, drop in clues, like, 50 years in the future. Okay, we meet this character, and, you know, 25 years in the future, he's still there, but he's not as powerful, you know, and you go back and...
That gives me a cool idea. It'd be really nifty if you had a flash forward, multiple flash forwards, but they were all of the same time. But
that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, but the flash changes depending on what the character's actions are. You know, like, first you see this apocalyptic world, and then maybe they take down some villain, and then it's kind of changed a little bit. It's slightly better. It's maybe civilization being rebuilt or something.
It would almost be like a prophetic vision.
Kind of. Yeah, exactly.
It's more of a, I guess, a meter or a tracker, like how effective what you're doing is.
Yeah.
I think that would be pretty cool. I think you would have to give the characters some plausible way of knowing that information. Well, and because what I mean is like
lots of ways to hand wave that psychic or magic. Well, but
that's what I mean. Like most fantasy games or most games, like, okay, you can do a dream like once or twice, right? But then if you kind of start to heavily rely on the dreams, I think it would kind of get weird, especially if the character kind of didn't have that psychic ability built in. You know what I mean?
Maybe. Like, I think you'd have to kind of go for all or nothing on that
one. Oh, yeah, definitely. You'd have to
use it sparingly.
It doesn't matter. I mean, it could be a meta thing where the characters actually don't know it. I think if you insert it like every few sessions, and that's how a session starts, mm-hmm. then it becomes a pattern and people mm-hmm. can see this. Yeah. This is if you're doing either version, if they're doing how the same period in time changes, depending on what they did, or if you were doing it changes the time period.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, you could. I don't think a dream could be overused. I think if you use it in different games and that's your game master
go-to
crutch,
thing.
then I can see it being overused. But if in that particular game it's just established that dreams happen and you're getting visions of the future, then people are going to embrace it.
It works.
Or if it was meta, like the players aren't really having these, or the characters aren't really having these dreams or these visions of the future, but the players are getting kind of idea.
It'd make a good intercession thing, too, just write it up and throw it on Facebook or something. But
I would actually kind of have them play it.
Yeah, I think that regardless of what kind of flash you're doing, flashback, flash forward, or flash sideways, it's more exciting if the players actually participate.
Oh, I agree on that.
They'll pay attention more.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the benefits to like these role playing games where you can actually like experience the time change. You know, you can be the characters in the flashback or you can be the characters in the flash forward. And I think that's kind of fun rather than just like kind of writing it up and saying, here's what happened.
And then there's also flashbacks, which is always good for giving exposition about how your story works or how your world works. What's the word for it? Including to add detail and information about your story.
I prefer my exposition with naked ladies, a la Game of Thrones style.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sex position.
That one's more just flash.
Oh, that sounds like sex, space, position. All right.
Oh, okay.
Man, it does take a long time for you to get jokes, doesn't it? You know what? You want to keep this podcast clean, don't make fun of me.
Yeah, we were making fun of Wayne's laugh before
we
started.
You gotta put it on the cast now, too.
Well, they've already heard
Everyone's heard it.
All right, but you don't have to call attention to it.
Call it the owl laugh.
Oh, you just made that up. You know what? I wish I could do a flashback. I'm not bringing that up. So anyway, flashbacks, yeah, as you said, they're kind of used for building up backstory or exposition. Mm.
They can also provide a bit of a break. And I think both flash forwards, flashbacks, or flash sideways allow you to break up the sessions a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, sometimes there can be a lull in a game. And, you know, we talk about different ways. You know, you're traveling from point A to point B, and that can be tedious. And right. I know, like, we were talking about Savage Worlds has that.
Oh, yeah, the
optional,
interludes.
Yeah, the optional interlude rules where you draw cards and then you have to tell a story based on what you drew. Sure, that's okay. But a flashback or something, a flash sideways, doing something else while the main story is traveling from point A to point B, it can be more exciting. For one thing, everybody's involved.
Yeah. Yeah,
listening to
yeah.
one person tell a story is probably about as exciting as traveling from point A to point B.
Well, that's a good way to do it. Is you know, you talk about having a story for one of the characters, play that story. I mean, hopefully you've gotten some backstory for your characters. So go back and play out a scene from it. Let the other players be NPCs in that story. And then flash sideways, it's not really much to say about that. It's just same time, but just a different place and perhaps different people. I used it in the DD campaign, as we said before, where the things had built to a crescendo where there were two opposing teams, kind of the good guys and the bad guys, and they were going to fight it out, but the player characters had gone off in another place. So I felt it would be kind of unfair to just tell them what happened when they got back. So I actually let them play. I split the group up into a team of good guy, team bad guy, and had them duke it out.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. So then it was just kind of a fun distraction on the side. And it felt fair as well, instead of just when they come back and say, hey, guess what? Everybody's dead.
I think Lyle would disagree.
You didn't balance the sides.
No, because one of the sides was more powerful. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it wasn't the side Lyle. Because you couldn't tell by that. Yeah.
Well, when he's saying, oh, no, if you did this or you did that, you would have... No.
No, you guys had a chance to win.
No,
yeah,
we didn't.
The chance to win was run away. Yeah.
And we weren't allowed to run away. Yeah. That was all.
Yeah, that part was DM fiat on mine. But
yeah. And I was like, okay, I try to...
try to jump up this window. Also, you like, wouldn't do that.
Well, that's the thing, though. Yeah,
there's a baby in the room. He's like, no. There's no baby. I'm rescuing this baby.
Oh, that was hilarious.
Okay, I'll throw the baby out the window, and I wrap myself around it.
Can I wrap the baby in paper?
No, can I wrap the note around the baby?
And there wasn't even a baby.
I guess that kind of gets to one of the pitfalls of using a flashback or a flash sideways or any of those, is that...
Characters don't do what you want them to.
Exactly. You know, you're not reading a book, you're not watching a movie, the characters won't do what you kind of need them to do. So, especially if you're running a flashback, you have to be aware as a GM that there's a chance that the players could do something and kind of alter the timeline of your game.
Absolutely.
There's kind of less danger in that if you do a flash forward because, you know, yeah, you obviously come back. But if you do like a flash sideways, I guess maybe one of the dangers could be that the players maybe don't see how it connects to the main story.
The other danger is that players know everything that happened. And if there's supposed to be some sort of mystery, then there isn't now because they've seen all the events that transpired. Or then there's kind of the frustration is they know what happened, but they don't have the clues to say that their character knows what happens, or to, in this case, you're saying, oh, this temple attacked that temple, and everybody's like, well, how do you know that? Oh, well, we played a flash sideways. Mm-hmm. But where's the evidence? And then the players are like, oh, come on, we saw what happened. And,
yeah.
And there could be that level of frustration.
That said, though, that could also be very fun for them, trying to figure out how to prove that this thing will happen.
Yeah, okay, you can have contingencies. Or I was thinking, just as a DM, be prepared to go with whatever the players then set up in that flashback or flash sideways.
That's good advice, and I think it works in any situation because players do what you don't want them, or expect them to.
Players always turn left when you're expecting them to turn right.
Yeah. Well, if you're doing like a flashback of a particular character's backstory, there's one thing that can't change. Is the particular character still alive?
Right.
True.
So you can't make it terribly dangerous.
Right.
Or you have to leave yourself an out.
Yeah, like that kind of happened to me when I did the dream sequence in Changeling, and that it was a flashback, and there was a combat in it, but you guys started out, your character started the adventure at full health, meaning everybody knew they were going to survive. And yeah, I could see flashbacks by that, I guess, kind of, but by the kind of rules, can't really be that tense because...
You know you're going to live.
You know you're going to live, right? Or if somebody dies during a flashback, well, what happens, right?
That said, though, I think I was fully fully immersed in that. Like, I wasn't thinking about, like, oh, I don't care, I'm going to live anyway. Like, I felt a sense of danger during that combat.
Well, yeah, because I had, as you said, I had set up a contingency plan. Like, there was always going to be that NPC you met at the end to heal you back up to full health, regardless of whoever got beat up, just so that you could start the game the way you did.
Mm-hmm.
So similar to kind of starting a session or every other session with kind of like a flash forward, you had kind of had an idea to start different sessions, Lyle.
Which one was that? Because I'm looking at two ideas on the...
Okay, looking at two ideas. All right, whichever one you want to go with next time.
Okay, one doesn't fit that intro. Okay.
Let's go with the one that does.
The one that does, yeah.
I think. Are you talking about the memento idea?
Actually, I wasn't.
Really? You were talking about the other one?
I was talking about the one with the letters.
How does that?
I'm on pins and needles. Which ones are they?
All right. So go with every one you want. Instead of a flashback, we should have a do-over.
Well, I don't know if this is going to match your intro, but it's next on the list. The epistolary style of the novels, for example, Dracula is the most famous one, I believe, where it's all told in letters and telegrams. The first one I ever read, though, was The Fan. Not the Wesley Snipes movie one.
Because that's a movie?
Right. I don't know if there was I don't know if that one's based on a book, but there was another movie called The Fan that was based on a book called The Fan. And it's told through correspondence, like letters back and forth, like the fan writing to this actress that he likes. And I mean, it's not a very long book, and I read it when I was a kid, and it's a book really for adults.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of blew me away. I was like, wow, why aren't people talking about this book? Because this style of writing, this is so innovative. And I didn't realize, like, over 100 years before, 100 years prior, that Dracula had used the same style. And then I actually picked up the book Dracula, and I was like, wow, they use the same style. Why don't people talk about that? Why they focus on the vampire? And it's like,
yeah, it's funny, as a kid, you kind of don't have a time reference.
Yeah, but how do you use that narrative structure in a game? I know with the hard boil game I ran, I kind of used a little bit where I kicked off the whole game using a magazine article and FBI wiretaps to show conversations. And I think what you could do is to just continue it and start every session with a letter or a magazine article or a transcript of something. And that can either provide a review of what happened in the last session, or that could provide a bridge between the previous session and the current session. So it doesn't have to necessarily follow the very next minute.
I'm actually doing that with one of my other campaigns now, the steampunk campaign. I start in between games. I do a little miniature newspaper page, and it has usually something that's about what they did in the previous session. And it has want ads on the side, which are basically ideas for what they can do for the next episode. And then sometimes I have a Dear Abby column on the side, and that's code for this kind of the secret organization that they're part of. There's messages hidden inside it.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. That sounds good.
Yeah, it's working okay. They seem to enjoy it, but they're not using like the want ads to pick out hooks like I wanted them to. But
I'm surprised. Yujiro usually devours that kind of thing.
He really does, and he sends lots of questions about them afterwards, but... Yeah.
I was thinking like you could almost write a letter from a person who's not actually in the campaign. For some reason, like they didn't do this in Game of Thrones, but for some reason I'm thinking of Game of Thrones. Like after the players finish an adventure or finish a scenario, there could be a letter from like one of the townspeople to a relative in like another town, or like a missive from one king to another, or a letter that relates the outcome of that scenario. Maybe referencing the characters by name, maybe not, depending on how close this NPC is. And then the players can just kind of see, oh, okay, here's what we did, and maybe here's a few possible consequences of what could happen. Like, for example, like the king says, oh, you know, the bandits were turned back, but, you know, because of all the people we lost, maybe we're not going to have enough farmers to collect food for the winter or something.
That's cool.
You know?
And it's just... It's not delivering hooks.
Possibly delivering hooks or
right,
just...
Right, so we'll get together and help harvest.
Yeah, well, I realize that was a pretty lame example. I just couldn't think of one as I was saying it. But...
You know, I used to play a campaign right after I moved to Japan. Of course, I had to drop out of the game I was in the States. And all those guys were playing one, but I was kind of playing an NPC at the same time, whereas the DM would send me an email of what was going on in the session. And as my character, I would write back a letter to them. And my character was just... He always signed a letter with P. So... It was kind of like that. It was where there was an extra character that only corresponded through letters, but kind of along those lines.
I think some novels kind of start with, you know, like a letter from someone or some kind of communication that it's not a person who's directly involved in the story. It's someone who's kind of on the
Citizen
King periphery.
Starts out with that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Then in the vampire game, all the clues to that particular investigation were all documents.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too.
There was the autopsy report. There was the detective's casebook.
Yeah, we never got into that, hey.
Yeah, you didn't pick that up. Yeah. If you had picked up that casebook, wow. But that would have allowed you to sidestep entirely the particular characters if you had chose, or to draw you back to the characters. But it was a way for let the documents do the talking as opposed to a more traditional interact with NPCs and have them tell you the things.
And it's a good way to give it to characters too, because if they're reading it themselves, then they're probably reading it in their character's voice in game, or they can hear it in their own heads as opposed to hearing, say, my voice as the GM telling it to them. So
yeah.
Could give some good immersion.
And then, it also allows it makes it slightly more realistic in that instead of the player going, oh, sorry, I forget, what was that?
They actually
have the documents in front of them. And
absolutely.
You're like, well,
if you have a little bit of time for it, you know, you can dress it up too, like put it on parchment or something.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Like,
well, if you're playing a modern campaign, don't put it on parchment.
Yeah.
Why is this police report on a scroll?
Yeah. Like, that's why I did, like,
Ye old autopsy.
Yeah, ye old autopsy. No, that's why I did the little dream snippets for changing on like little scraps of paper so you guys could hold on to them.
Your props are always awesome.
It got a little bit ridiculous, as you pointed out, Lon, because you had to hold on like 50 little scraps of paper.
They kept falling out.
Well, yeah.
Of the
I should have given
folder
you, I should have given you an envelope, but I was going to say that if play like I remember stuff better when I actually have the thing written down, you know.
And it's a matter of, well, you don't have to remember it, too.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, yeah, there it is. And
any pitfalls to be concerned of?
Well, the original pitfall is the time it takes to write it. So definitely, like, you plan it out. If you do, like, you decide that it's going to be – something is going to start the session, then just make it one thing. And it also – I think – sorry, I know we're supposed to be doing pitfalls, but I another thing – an advantage of the – epistolary style, or this adaptation of the style, is that you can use the language of that period.
Definitely.
So if you're doing something that's only a few decades past, people just might want to use the same slang and terminology as they do now. But you're like, no, this is how people talked, and this is how people thought about different sexual orientations, or this is how they thought about different races or ethnicities.
Be careful not to go overboard, especially if you're doing like Old English or something. I bite my thumb at you, sir.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you don't want people to laugh. You want people to be immersed in the situation.
Well, you don't want people to not be able to read and say, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
But yeah, like it can be a great immersion. You can create a new slang if you're doing in the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because again, people tend to play the future like they play now.
Mm-hmm.
Just they got more gadgets.
Yeah.
But if you don't, if you want people not to think that way, like if you were playing Eclipse Phase, then a certain data file that somebody has or something on the, in the clouds, I'm drawing a blank. What do they call the clouds in Eclipse Phase?
Oh, the mesh.
The mesh.
You could have different slang in there and, you know, the way they talk about regular bodies versus other types of sleeves. And that could kind of get people thinking about, yeah, these people don't think about bodies the same way that I do.
Yeah, as like a designer and like a visual person, I always kind of try and match the way the note itself looks to kind of the setting. Like, you know, use like a parchment for like medieval style or...
Well, when you had those passports for that pulp game, I thought that was really effective way of... putting us in that world. You even had the period, like a sepia, I think you used.
Yeah, like I tried
style
to make
photographs.
Yeah, like, you know, monochrome photographs. But I was thinking, like, if you do, like an old-style game, you can put the stuff on, like, things that say telegraph. You know, if you're using telegraph or... all right.
As opposed to email.
As opposed to email, yeah. As opposed to, like, using the cloud.
You have an email if you're using email.
Yeah. Interesting that you didn't use that for Eclipse Phase, though. You just wrote it on regular paper. As opposed to maybe sending it by email.
Like, I didn't want to actually send it by email.
Mm-hmm.
I still like paper.
Something physical.
I still like something physical.
Yeah, and not all of us have smartphones.
Exactly.
Okay. My phone, I still got a few months before it's obsolete. Officially obsolete.
No. Oh, officially obsolete.
Right. Oh, you think it's obsolete. It's a tough little phone.
Yes.
You gotta respect that.
Yeah. Champion.
Little champion phone.
So getting off phones and back to the pitfalls.
I think, the only pitfall is time.
Yeah.
I think if you were trying to Delary's style, it'd be impossible.
Yeah.
Because you would not be able to write as the players are playing to give them their...
Obviously. Unless you're doing like a play-by-email campaign or something like that.
I suppose. Yeah.
But I've never tried one of those before to say, so.
Yeah.
Could be good for a political game, though. And speaking of not having enough time... Or speaking of time, okay, screw you.
Speaking of not having enough time, I wish I had thought more about
what
I'm saying.
That time going
based on based on the face Lau gave me.
The next one's a bit of a cheat, and it is the memento idea. Of course, you can't really do something backwards, although we tried. I mean, this was kind of us being experimental.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with, if you try to do, if anybody's watched the movie Memento, they'll know, but anybody who hasn't, is that the story is told backwards.
Spoiler.
No, I think it's, we talked about it before. Premise.
All right.
The only reason to say it. Which is a great movie, and they do a really good job, and in the hands of somebody like Christopher Nolan and his brother, you can pull it off. But the thing is, it's a very passive structure in that it's really good for the audience to watch it and congratulate themselves that they were able to follow the story, even though it was backwards. It would be an absolute disaster for a game to follow that rigidly, because everything the player does or everything the players do in a session means nothing, because you're now going to play the previous point in time. So, I mean, time goes forward, so there can't be consequences of something that you did in
right,
the future.
Their things are always kind of invalidated because you always jump back to before they did it.
Yeah.
And I just thought of this now, not to cut you off. I remember in the Lovecraft episode, we talked about cosmicism and how you kind of have this overall pervading sense of futility and that you're not going to win. And again, it wouldn't be a long game and players would possibly get really tired of it, but I could see doing something like that in that kind of a game. Like, how fun would it be? I don't know, but that's kind of the one genre where the players kind of not getting to that goal is slightly acceptable.
The only way that I can see it working, because you're right.
We just said it's not going to work, but okay, go.
Well, why are we talking about it then? Here's an idea that's a bad idea.
I was going to give an adaptation of it, but all right.
Is if you did kind of that that separated sandbox idea where the players start in this area and they have kind of a very free rein to do whatever they'd like to do in this based on a main story or not, and then kind of move backwards in time to another point and then just give them that free rein there. But you wouldn't be able to follow a storyline with that, so there's not really much of a point to it.
Right.
Sorry, you were going to say
which I think is what Lyle said when he set up the bit.
It's impossible. Have you just talked yourself out of it?
No, I think that you could play it, but I just don't see a point to doing it that way.
Okay.
So now saying that it's impossible, what's the alternative?
The adaptation.
Oh, the adaptation is more of a, if anybody's, I brought up before, but the game DOA, Dead on Arrival.
Movie?
What did I call game?
Game, yeah.
Oh, sorry, the movie. If someone's read the movie Hyperion, they have a take on this, a really clever take.
I believe that's a
What about...
You said read the movie.
Read the movie.
The movie hype. What am I? I'm just like... I'm out there. All right. Okay, the movie DOA, the book Hyperion, and this will be for your game. Now that I...
You're such a comic.
Is you kind of start at what a traditional end. And in DOA, it starts off with, I'd like to report a murder. Whose murder? My own.
Hello, premise.
Hyperion has a nice, clever spin in that AIs don't really die because they have the backup personas. And this could work for Eclipse Phase. Somebody kills a persona, and before the backup comes or reboots, they've lost a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to know what happened in that period of time and who killed them. I think that could be a really good way to start off an adventure is you know what the end is. You know, you got your players, you got a dead red dragon. They're like, what's going on? We've killed this red dragon. Why? What are we doing in this room with a bloody sword?
And lots of gold. What could we possibly be doing here?
Yeah, there's the flaw in that land. Like, let's find out who killed this dragon. Screw that. Let's just go spend this gold we got.
Might be us, but why did we kill a dragon? It was a dragon? Oh good.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Well done, sir.
Why did we kill that dragon? The thief just points to the mountain of gold underneath the corpse. That's why.
Just throwing it out there. But you could start off in a kind of a, in the midst of the mystery. The Hangover, popular comedy, is where they can't remember the previous evening, the bachelor party.
So it's backtracking kind of story.
Yeah, it's a backtracked kind of story. And so they're like, okay, let's empty our pockets. And they throw it on the table and look at the, you know, the receipts. And then they go back and it's like, oh, we went to the hospital. And then you go in that way. So you're kind of, in a sense, telling the story in reverse.
Mm-hmm.
But what the players do still has consequences because they're trying to figure out what it is. Could be who murdered them. Where is that missing time?
Yeah, they're still traveling forward in time. So
it's not a flashback. You know, it's kind of, no, we're just missing this time in the past, but we're still starting from this point moving forward. Yeah.
It's almost like a reverse flashback. Or an anti-flashback in that they don't have it. They're trying to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's actually missing.
Yeah, there was an episode of How I Met Your Mother that kind of did that. You know, one of the characters, you know, Ted wakes up in bed with this, like, girl next to him and this kind of, like, just random pineapple on the nightstand and the stuff written on his arm. Doesn't know what happened. And then, you know, the rest of the episode is him talking to people and piecing together what happened.
Yeah, it's a good way to do it. With, like you mentioned, Lyle, with Eclipse Phase, to where the character wakes up after having died. And that's a really good way to really drive that point home. You could also use this in a fantasy setting where they've been reincarnated or resurrected or whatever magic has there.
Yeah. Or you could have it where, like DOA, where you're going to die. And maybe you can't stop that. But it does give you a nice time limit.
Mm-hmm.
So it creates a bit of excitement. But at least you want to get the person who did it
and
try to figure that out. Or you could do, like, the Hangover and you need to find somebody. And to find them, you got to figure out, like, put in the fill in the gaps in your memory.
Mm-hmm.
That would actually be really cool. Like, you could definitely start a session or a kind of a storyline that way. But if someone is missing, I could see that as a really good way to account for somebody who's left the group because they can't play anymore, right? You were playing with this guy, and now
that's a really good idea.
You just kind of start, and that person's missing.
Yeah.
And you don't know what happened to them, and you got to kind of go back and find them. Or if there was even like an NPC that the characters kind of became, or players kind of became attached to, be like, okay, jump ahead, and now this person's missing, and you don't know why, and you have to go find that person.
And you could really spring it on the players. I think one of you mentioned it prior to recording. Yeah, you just start a session, and it's jumped a week into the future, but it's not a flash forward, because you're not going to go back and play that week, but they're like, well, you can't remember. They're like, what do you mean I can't remember? It's like, you just don't know.
Yeah.
You've got these clues. You've got this head of this NPC. Like, figure out what happened.
Yeah, and if you need to fill in some more information or details, you can go on the old trope of amnesia. Fairly recently, Liam Neeson did a movie, The Unknown, about that, where his character gets in a car crash.
Oh, I saw a trailer for that.
Yeah,
it looks good, actually.
It is really good.
Yeah.
And he has to kind of figure out what's going on, what's happening. And there's a whole big conspiracy theory angle to it as well. But it's good stuff.
Recommend that. Unknown?
I think The Unknown.
The Unknown. Yeah. Oh, I'll check it out.
I was going to say, to really drive home the fact that you're not starting in the same place that you left off, in addition to time, I would also do physical location. Even if it's just like a different if you're doing like a fantasy campaign, even if it's just like a different tavern in the same city, or if you're doing a more modern one, like a different place that they wake up in, I think that would really drive home the, oh, something really is different here.
Yeah, I've just been reading some science fiction books recently, and playing up with gravity, mm-hmm. even just waking up, and it's like, wow, it's really heavy. It's really difficult to, like, get up because you're in a heavy gravity world, things like that. I don't know, it just seemed like that can add a lot to the adventure, and you're like, I'm on a different planet. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, how do we get here? You could wake up in an ice cave in a fantasy world, and it's just...
Whoa, man, it's cold. Who turned on the air conditioner? Oh, crap!
Yeah,
we're on an ice world.
Yeah. Okay.
Or a cave in an ice world.
And who killed this white dragon?
No!
kind of, I just thought of something. It's like, if you have these ice dragons, I'm sure you could, like, tame one or compel one, and then you have air conditioning in the medieval times.
Before it eats you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was just thinking about Lord of the Rings. They could, Sam and Frodo are sitting there at Mount Doom with the ring going, why are we here with this ring in this volcano? I don't know. We got some clues. Oh, let's go back to the Shire. Retrace our steps.
Yeah.
Someone killed this spider. Strange.
It would either be a really long adventure where they trek back to the Shire, then go all the way back to Mount Doom, or it'd be like a really, really short adventure where Frodo rolls up his sleeve and says, oh, drop ring in volcano. Okay, boom, done. It took all about, what, 5 minutes? Yeah, all right, session's over, I guess.
There and back again, and then there. And back again. Finally there. Can you see any pitfalls?
Aside from the fact that you said it's impossible.
No.
I'm just kidding.
All right. Yeah, it's pitfalls on the adaptation. I mean, it is not telling the stories backwards, but it is as close as we can get in the game.
Yeah. We think. I think because it plays as a mystery story, you have all the possible pitfalls that you have in a mystery. You know, players not being able to pick up the clues that you intend, or coming to the wrong kind of premise and going off in directions you don't expect. Mm-hmm. Especially because... I think with this, because you have the events planned out in a course, you have less freedom to adapt them than you might in a regular mystery. So it might, you'd have to be pretty careful with the clues you give them.
I know what you're saying is, I don't think if you use like the hangover technique, let's say, or the Agatha Christie technique, where he's like, here's all the things. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do with them? Like, here's all these receipts and ticket stubs. They could do them in a different order. Mm-hmm. So you're not actually going to go kind of backwards.
Right.
It is going to jump into probably different time periods or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I don't see it as a pitfall. I just let it happen.
Yeah.
Since you're not really doing flashbacks, yeah, if you lay out all these receipts and say, okay, we were at bar A, then we went to bar B.
Well, hopefully, though, the clues would pace themselves. You'd get more clues once you go to bar B and then bar C.
Yeah, but I mean, you could kind of, the GM would kind of have to say, okay, they can go to any of these places first. There isn't a right one that they're going to go to get the next clue.
And I think that's good advice for really any story, is allow your locations to be modular. You know, if these people need a clue next, allow that clue to be able to drift into different locations to where the characters go.
Yeah, I was going
to
say,
I suppose we covered this in our mysteries podcast a while back.
So. I don't really see there being any different pitfalls from a mystery game, as you said, Chris. It's just kind of a different setup.
I agree. Mystery. So listen to that podcast too, everybody.
Well, you thought I was going to like split hairs again and disagree again? After 56, 57 episodes, I've learned my lesson. I've learned that those parts just get edited out.
But now you've taken to just repeating what Chris said at the beginning of the discussion.
All right. So maybe it'll take me another 50 episodes before I stop doing that.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online at the website, www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. Listen to us there or through Stitcher or through iTunes, or download the episodes on DriveThruRPG. Make sure to post on the comments in the episodes, in our forums, email us, write on Facebook, any place you can get a hold of us, because we love hearing from you. And,
And we'll continue that John's Dilemma discussion on the forums.
Yeah. And,
Dear Idle Red Hands. Mm-hmm.
Yep, the
thank $10 you for penicillin.
The $10 gift certificate contest is still going on up until March 7th. So, you still have a chance to win that. And we also now have a Twitter button on our website. So follow us there, too.
Click.
Yep. All right. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-through RPG. the one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.